Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Hallo und willkommen in der Fun Zone.
It's been a long couple of days.
What on earth does that mean?
We're in the Fun Zone, boys. We're at Gamescom.
How dare you describe my bedroom as the Fun Zone?
Yeah, we are recording this in a Cologne bedroom. We're not on a roof this year. I'm not going to drop my chocolate. Don't worry. Mainly because I've already eaten it all.
Dropping your chocolate sounds like a really, really dirty thing. And I definitely don't want you doing it in this room. Thank you very much.
That's the voice of Alex Simmons, who's kindly hosted this podcast in his bedroom.
Oh, yeah. You're very welcome. Welcome to the Fun Palace, or whatever you call it.
It's just the Fun Zone. Is it? But are you enjoying the Fun Zone?
So far, yeah. There's a lovely green window sofa. Is that what we call this?
It's like a love seat.
I'm leaving. It's not the Fun Zone I wanted.
It's almost like a built-in. Imagine, listeners, just close your eyes and imagine like a windowsill with like almost like a. I don't know why I'm closing my eyes. I'm looking at like a built-in chaise lounge.
You have to be very short for this to be a chaise lounge.
Well, you know, you can always find a way to make anything a chaise lounge.
I don't even know what that means.
No, neither do I. We're a couple of days into Gamescom. If you can't tell already. Some of us are very tired, but we've also been seeing lots of exciting games and playing some of them too. It's not the biggest year for, you know, new reveals, but there's lots of, you know, exciting games coming out soon that we just haven't had a good look at yet, and we've been getting that this week, I think.
Yeah.
I think, but you two have obviously seen that you saw a lot of games in the run-up to Gamescom, which have been held back to now. And
yes, people, you know, on the curtain.
O&L had some all right stuff.
Oh, I thought O&L was bad. Well, I was really bored all the way through
it. Yeah. Well, I put it this way. I'm pleased I wasn't in the room.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, God, yeah.
It would have been difficult to maintain the hype.
That wasn't a Fun Zone. Not like this.
Not like this.
No, this is a big Fun Zone. Mm-hmm. I don't know, should we just kick it off with what we're seeing?
You're the man with the running
order. I'm going to start out with something I saw.
Go on then.
Maybe because it's the biggest thing, right? Starfield. We're only, a week away now from, if you pay extra from playing Starfield. Yeah, I've seen the first. It looked like it was pretty much the first mission of the game. It spanned, I watched about 15 to 20 minutes, but it was, faded in between and sped up. It looked like it was quite a bit longer, of the game. But I saw the very opening of the game set in 2330, which I think we might have already known when this game was set, but it's nice to know. May 7th. 2330. Oh, so probably lovely temperatures.
Just after my brother's birthday.
Oh, there we go.
I think he'll be alive then.
Has he ever visited the Argos Extractors mining post on the moon of Vectera?
He's probably been to a Argos, but probably not that one.
Yeah. Do you went to an Argos?
I don't know, but it didn't select any special ores from the catalogue.
Were you a weirdo kid like me who just enjoyed like getting the catalogue at home and just flipping through all the different toys? No, you never.
Oh no, like my I used to sometimes get sent to my great aunties to sort of stay for a day while my parents did fun stuff. And all she used to do is give
the fun stuff.
Right here.
Dropping chocolate.
But I used to get given the Argos catalogue and told to cut out the toys I liked and stick them on a piece of paper. What a terrible childhood.
I know, because I still do that with Ed, but rather than cutting them out, like a Smith's catalogue is the like the ultimate version, but I know we're not talking about Starfield, but circling it. And so, like, that normally sort of goes out in September.
Does he not just send you links to what he wants?
Not yet, he will do. But he does literally circle everything in the entire catalogue, and I'm like, you're kind of missing the point here.
Yeah. In the catalogue of Starfield, do you get everything in the first 15 minutes?
You can get it looks like you get a taste of a bit of everything this game. Maybe not everything this game itself will offer, because it offers a lot by the sounds of it. But yeah, you start off in a very, I don't know, is it a very Bethesda way? Like, it starts off boldly, I'd say, by making you instantly think of No Man's Sky, which will be a good thing and a bad thing for some people.
In what way?
Well, you start off basically mining ore with a big red laser beam, which is what you do a lot at the start of No Man's Sky if you play it in the career mode way.
So you're a miner at the start?
It's like, it looks like it's almost like your first day job. I don't feel like just a jobber, if you know what I mean,
Of makes sense in the fact that, like, obviously a lot of Bethesda games, you sort of start in jail to a certain degree. Like, Oblivion, you started in jail, and
you're
Skyrim.
You're starting at the bottom, now you're here by the end. You know? And, like, basically, you're talked to by these couple of characters, and you can already tell, like, the Bethesda writing's always strong. Like, they're good with character work, and, like, they do a great job, like, early on of not only introducing you to this universe and, like, throwing, like, lots of, like, lingo and slang that, like, you quickly kind of work out. Like, you're referred to as a Dusty, which is probably, I'm guessing, like, the word nickname for miners or someone who's new on the job or something like that. And you're kind of learning all that as you go. But also it's quite funny. They're kind of, like, playing around with you. And then you have to, you know, you're learning the basic mechanics like walking and how to fire by doing a little bit of mining. But then you're told, can you just go down this long dark tunnel and touch this weird artifact?
Nowhere.
They're like very mysterious. They're like, okay, the real reason we're not down this mine, you know, we're looking for something much more valuable than just some beryllium.
I mean, it sounds like why would you just choose your average miner to do this? This sounds like,
I think they're wary of it. They're dangerous. Right, like, you don't want to.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you don't want to. Exactly. So what happens is, it's kind of a bit like the start of Mass Effect 1 in some ways. So you go down into this tunnel and, you know, I'm sorry if you think this is spoilers for the Starfield, but it's literally the first 10 minutes of this game. There's probably dozens of hours long. But you touch this sort of artifact, which is, the way I describe it, it's kind of like a piece of metallic, kind of shiny blue, like, metal. It doesn't look particularly like wow, this is worth a lot. And you touch it, and then you have these weird, almost like 2001, like, visions. You see some weird shapes, some colours, some stars.
Do I get the space baby?
There's no space baby, as I've seen yet. But, yeah, that happens. Then you black out, and you're in, like, a medical facility, and then that's when the character creation starts. They basically hold up a tablet, and they're like, do you remember who you are, basically?
Right,
okay. And that's when, I had a brief look at character creation. I think people have seen that before.
Yeah, like, I remember the tablet being in the direct.
There's backgrounds and traits, and it looks like whatever one of those, like, it's going to be a reactive world, I think, because whatever one of the dozen or two dozen backgrounds you pick for your character, the character, as soon as you exit the character creation, they remark on your path. They're like, can't remember what one it was they picked. They're like, oh, sounds like you had an adventure getting here or something like that, based on whatever background you picked. And then there's when they kind of walk out. Again, I don't know how much this has all happened in about 5 minutes. It's probably a bit longer in the actual game this happens. But you do a long walk through a tunnel, and you're basically told, there's this man come in who wants to buy this artifact of us, which is the whole idea. Mm-hmm. They're mining, they're going to sell it to someone who's from Constellation, which is this group of, like, universe explorers who almost kind of, like, have this sort of, like, folklore sort of energy in this world. Mm-hmm. Like, one of them remarks, like, oh, half the people in this facility don't even believe these guys exist. So this guy appears, but before that, you kind of have what Bethesda call their step-out moments, you know, Fallout where you go out the vault, or in Skyrim, and the big dragon comes over top.
Yeah, it's like when you come out of the jail in Oblivion, and, like, your eyes adjust to the environment.
This one isn't as, because there's almost kind of, like, they almost have two or three of these moments, but none of them hit quite as hard as like a vault opening. So the first one is this big circular door in this facility opens and you realise, wow, I'm on this really nice looking like moon and yes, the sky looks awesome and the environments look like the best you'd expect, a step up to what Bethesda has done before.
Yeah.
The character models though still have that. Do you know what I mean when I say that Bethesda sort of
look, absolutely,
like,
yes,
stiffness?
Yeah,
well, there's dead behind the eyes, aren't they?
Yeah, the eyes are a little...
It's a shame. It's a shame because their character writing is so good. It's a shame that they've never quite been able to match the writing with the reaction on the face and stuff like that.
But yeah, basically after that, this character called Barrett arrives from Constellation and lo and behold, he's been trapped by space pirates. And they land and the Crimson Fleet are here and you have a little, looks like a little shootout. Interestingly, it did say in the top left corner that that objective to pick up a weapon is optional. So I don't know if you can either, if you can just let the combat happen and you don't, if you can just be purely pacifist in this game.
Well, I bet you can also join the space pirates at one point, can't you? So maybe that's, maybe the, that's your first scene is
in. Or maybe you just punch him, you know, pick up a weapon. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that little skirmish happens and you're told, basically Barrett goes, you're involved in this now, you can handle yourself. You go to Constellation and deliver this artifact yourself.
Right.
And Constellation is on this, in the city of New Atlantis, which people might have seen before. It's a massive city like no other I've seen. Like it's, it would be a good chunk the size of a Fallout map. The city, it looks like quite big, like varied environments. There's coffee shops, there's gardens, there's massive skyscrapers.
On the same planet.
Yeah, on the, it's in the same city on this planet. Like, right. I don't even know if you can go to other places on this planet, but this city alone was huge. By the way,
it might potentially be one of those where like the planet is that city, right? Like that's the location on the planet you're allowed to explore.
Yeah, I didn't see that, so I do not know. But actually, I skipped a bit before that, which is it introduced you to space combat. So like I said, it gives you a taste of everything Starfield has to offer. And the space combat does look fun. It's hard to gauge the gunplay when you're not playing it. Yeah. It looks good when they were doing it, but until you have it in your hands, you never really know. But space combat, I'm always a sucker for space combat. Like, in Star Wars games, they're my favourite.
And by space combat, you mean, like, dogfighting? Like,
yeah, dogfighting. Yeah, so a couple of ships turn up, you take them down, it looks like you have, like, different missiles and, like, ballistic weapons as well.
And presumably that's just on the first ship you get, I guess, exactly. Like, you change your ship over time.
Yeah, I don't know where you get that ship from. Mm-hmm. I don't know if... Oh, they just go on it. It looks like it's Barrett's ship. But, yeah, I don't know if he... I don't know if he just says, this is yours, cheers. Right. But then, like, yeah, you... This, again, it skips through this whole section very quickly. And then you, there's a little montage of New Atlantis, and then you go into the Constellation building, which looks really nice. Lovely dark wood furniture all around the place. Looks lovely. And you're basically saying, they go, we've got a lot of work to do, and then the demo ended.
Did you voice it?
Yeah, I did. I did. It was me. It wasn't Todd Howard.
We've got a lot of work to do.
Oh, yeah. Todd Howard told me all this, by the way. That was cool. Yeah, first time I was 2 feet away from Todd Howard. He looked me in the eyes as he spoke about Starfield, which made me feel special.
Oh.
Well, say, Cody, it sounds like an odd part of the game for them to show. I would have showed, if I were Todd Howard, which I'm not, I have not made many award-winning RPGs and released Skyrim 50 times, but I think I would have liked to have seen something that was a bit like, hey, here's... you know what they did with Cyberpunk when it was a hands-off where it was like, we'll play it through one way and then we'll rewind the mission and show you how it could have done if you'd done like a stealth build or if you'd said different things.
I don't know, like maybe, I don't know how far into this game things change. Maybe there's spoiler reasons, I have no idea.
Maybe.
I will say like, that obviously that first mission, or well, I don't know if that is the whole of the first mission, like, does give you a taste of it. Maybe that's why they picked it. Like, introduced to the world... Some combat, some space combat, character creation, different environments. Like,
I think the main thing is I saw GQ have released like a profile and with Todd Howard and stuff. And like one of the things that that GQ article had said is that it, well, the headline at least was, or the tweet was something like the idea of it's their most RPG game that they've made since Oblivion, and obviously that's several games ago now. Well, at least three. And I would have liked to have known how RPG it is, but it sounds like what they've done is they've showed you 10 minutes of walking through a mine and shooting some stuff.
Yeah, I didn't. It's hard to grasp how much RPG-ness there was to that stuff.
Because that's where I've got my fingers crossed. You know, that's part of the stuff I live and breathe.
Exactly.
So.
I could get away with, you know, less than top-class gunplay and combat if it fulfills that kind of, like, space RPG.
Yeah.
But yeah, it looked like Starfield. I mean, you know, I didn't feel like I learned a lot necessarily, but it was cool to see how that game starts. And I'm sure they skipped some cool bits as well that maybe I didn't see. But yeah.
It does feel bonkers that it's out in less than 2 weeks or whatever.
Yeah.
And still no one's really played it.
Yeah, yeah.
Which
we can only
is
be
that
hopeful.
A good thing or a bad thing? I don't know.
I mean, there's a few like there are a few games that are missing at the show that like there's a poster for Assassin's Creed Mirage, but
right.
I don't know anybody that's played it. I don't think it's here. So
I don't think it's here. No.
Yeah, no one's
it's just the mobile version.
Yeah. Call of Duty's out in November, and I know that kind of like that means there's still more months than there is for Starfield. But there is a surprising amount of big games that like, I've not heard of. No, I don't think anybody got to play like Avatar at Summer Games Fest, right? And it's not here either.
No one's played Spider-Man. No one's played. We'll get onto it later. No one's played Animate. We've only seen that off, hands off as well. Like, yeah. I don't know, maybe it's just
hopefully
just
these games are all good and it's that we're in a new weird era where people don't get to play games early.
We can hope. But not only at this Todd Howard and Phil Spencer-led presentation did I see a glimpse of Starfield. Out of nowhere, very surprising, Todd Howard's like, oh, while we've all got you, we're never releasing this to the public, but do you want to see 30-second teaser of the Fallout TV show? Which, I'll be honest, I forgot was even a thing happening.
Yes, yeah.
It's always been one of those things I feel like that's bubbled away, but like this is the first time I was like, oh, they're actually making it.
Yeah. I think I remember they got, like, they did a photograph, didn't they, of the Red Rocket Mechanics Bay, which was the Fallout 4 menu screen. So that was cool to see that.
But basically, if you don't know a lot about the Fallout TV show, it's due in 2024, next year, written by, and I think directed a couple episodes by Jonathan Nolan, Christopher Nolan's brother, who did Westworld. So,
which was good for a season.
It started well. I'm hopeful for this, though, because from what I've seen about 8 shots of this. it looked right.
In terms of, like Amazon pumps money into
exactly.
shows.
Like, so. It looked good, it looked right. I've only seen these clips once, so I can't remember, but like the Brotherhood have still looked like ominous. They looked menacing. Yeah. They looked, I couldn't really, it looked like they were like practical costumes, which is good. Like, it didn't look all CGI'd. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's some nukes going off later in the trailer, which must be CGI.
I would hope so.
Unless, you know, like, the Nolans do love their practical nuke effects. But, not the Nolan sisters. I mean, for nuking, that's a 70s reference for a lot of people. I've currently lost track of that. Yeah, there's a, as we said before, there's a step out moment. There's a vault opening at some point.
Right.
There's a ghoul, which I believe is played by Walton Goggins.
Who's in it? Who are their kind of
Walton Goggins?
Oh, I thought that was a character name, not a real person.
Do you know what? I haven't looked at the full cast list of this, and I probably should have. But there we go. There's what else was there? He had a cowboy hat on. He looked a bit like. It's separate from the games, the story they said, so it looked a bit like John Hancock from Fallout 4, if you remember what he looked like. Mm-hmm. It was a ghoul with like a cowboy hat on.
Yeah.
Is a cowboy hat or like a fedora?
Doesn't he have like it's almost like it's Hancock era, isn't it? It's like the American Revolution. He's got like a red jacket on, I think, with the tassels. And
right. Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
Like we saw the Bertie Bird like going over some like desert. That reminded me a bit of Dune a little bit, which is only good, I think. And the other details we know is that it takes place in LA and it's Vault 33 that it is focusing on. So
okay.
There we go. I like the Fallout games, but I'm not someone who's like knows all like the inside out. I don't know if that's an important number.
I'm assuming it's not the vault that was just full of people that went gradually insane that are all called Gary.
The Gary vault is fantastic from Fallout 3, that one.
A New Vegas, I think. Yeah.
They all muddled together. But yeah. It looks good.
It'll be interesting because obviously, you know, with The Last of Us, we've seen, that reached a much bigger audience. The first time that I've had conversations with people outside of the games industry who have watched it and, you know, like loved it. Do you think Fallout's got that potential?
It depends what route they go with the story, right? They could go the more pulpy side of Fallout where it's like we're taking on the Brotherhood.
Yeah.
You know, they could go the Halo route, which is the worrying route.
Yeah.
Or they could go the more personal, like Fallout 3 has a very, four too, have like very personal, like, but they both are in some stories.
Kind of to an degree, extent. Yeah.
Like, if they're going more like that, then I'm more hopeful. Jonathan Nolan like tends to do quite smart writing, so I wouldn't imagine he's just going, let's just have a film where there's a war on.
The only thing that you've not got is obviously with The Last of Us, they had a very proven script that they used, not wholesale, but like significant chunks of.
Very strong foundation.
Yeah, that had already been proven as a good story. Whereas with Fallout, it's obviously not set in any, I don't, because Fallout 1 isn't doesn't have that setting. So I don't, it's its own thing, right?
Yeah.
So well, it's, you're relying on writers that have a love for that source mm-hmm. material and can convey that, and are good storytellers.
Well, yeah.
The well, medium.
One thing I didn't see, which I hope it still has, is kind of like we said, that Bethesda sort of like charm and humor that they put mm-hmm. and pump into their games. Like I didn't see a lot of the, like, I didn't see anything that really properly hinted at, like, you know how Fallout's like, what, frozen in time in the 50s?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't see that side of it, and I don't know if that actually have little bubble heads and that sort mm-hmm. of, like, imagery, like...
Right.
But I hope it still has a lot of that kind of charm to it, and it's not just, like, we're in the post-apocalypse.
Yeah,
it's
got to have that, though, yeah, surely.
Yeah, that's what makes Fallout, isn't it? It's that kind of weird, overly cheeriness in the face mm-hmm. of absolute
and
Armageddon.
You can have fun little, you know, in quotation marks, pocket episodes,
mm-hmm.
where they do go to, a Gary vault.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. that would be a very funny episode of that show, I think. But... yeah, there we go. Hopefully, I think they said there's bigger teasers to come, so maybe sure. we'll see something else soon. But yeah. Should we go back to games? Why not? Let's go back. Why don't we stick with Xbox exclusives? Because they've got a massive booth at Gamescom, and they're kind of mm-hmm. the biggest presence here by quite a distance, you'd say. Matt, Stalker 2, you've actually got to play.
Yeah, I played it about an hour and a half ago.
Yeah. I imagine it's quite a hard game to get a grasp of in a very short amount of time.
Yeah, they made a very, very short demo for it, which I guess was very curated to make sure you could get through in about 15 minutes, because it was a half an hour demo, but obviously allowing the fact that you're going to die probably quite a lot, because yep. Stalker's a bit hardcore, which I did about three times across the demo. But it was... very much so. I haven't played Stalker since the original one came out. I played that on release in 2007, I think it was. But it was a bit like muscle memory. And weirdly, it felt almost like it was a remake rather than necessarily a sequel. It was so kind of like, oh, this is the style of game that I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like instantly kind of like the feeling of being in their open environments. Like, I'm assuming it's an open world, like what the original one is. I must say, I haven't done a huge amount of research around this. This is very much Jesse's department. But yeah, the combat has that very realistic sort of peek around corners, aim down. The guns feel good, but it's not got... You know the feedback that modern shooters have got now, where you can hear every bullet striking yep. like your target, and then when you get the kill, you get the little X that comes up in the yep. middle of the crosshair? You don't have any of that. So there's a certain amount of realism where it's like you've shot over there, and you're pretty sure that you've hit, but you don't know until the guy either just doesn't start standing up again,
right,
or pops his head from behind cover. You don't know.
What,
and
what era does it have, like modern weapons, or is it all... quite old?
It all feels like it's been so long since I played the original Stalker that I don't really remember what the lore is, but I think it's almost like semi Fallout-ish in the fact that kind of like after the
car night, eggs.
Yeah, they're all things from that kind of like 70s era.
Right.
When was the Chernobyl disaster? That's in the 80s, right?
Yeah. I think. Don't put me on the spot with world history.
Well, you've watched the TV series and I haven't, so
yeah, I don't remember. Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of, I think there's almost a sort of sense of like frozen in time around that sort of area. Mm. So they're all kind of like old kind of AKs and stuff like that. It doesn't do the metro thing of where it's all cobbled together stuff. But
is it fun? I don't know, I think this I didn't realise that Alex in the adjoining room, and it sounds like the person next door just made some noise. You could hear that. I don't know. It's like being at a live podcast, isn't it?
I keep Jesse in the dungeon next door.
Is that the real fun zone?
That's why he's trying to come out. He's trying to talk about Stalker. Tell me where I'm going wrong.
I just have one big question about Stalker. I'm sure it's very impressive, like realism. Is it fun?
Yeah, I would say so. What I will say is that I think there's a lot been made about the fact that it's like an Unreal 5 game and it's going to look next gen. I must say, it looked about 3 years old to me. The faces on the characters looks about 6 years old.
Wow.
And obviously,
given.
I know.
Obviously, there's still time, you know, for them to shape up. But this is why I said in some ways it almost feels like a remake. It's got a lot of that jank that the original is known for. It's very much still feels like it's in that slightly underfunded Eurojank kind of vibe, despite the fact
that genre
it's common out of Eastern Europe, I can tell you that. But and that's not to say that it's not good and it's not got charm. There were things about it that I liked, in that you know, there are these kind of anomalies, which are these big kind of rippling pools of air in front of you. And you have to throw things into them to get them to erupt so you can walk past them. So, you know, there might be a hole in a fence that you want to get through because this is the way that you can rotate around an enemy camp. But you've got to blow it up, basically. And, you know, it makes a noise when it goes off. So maybe some mutant dogs will run after you and stuff like that. So
did you see any freaks?
I was really hoping that like the tentacle faced things would be in it and I get a good view for how much of a, because it's kind of a horror game as well as like a hardcore military shooter, and there was just some dogs that, you know, they were missing ears and got slightly bigger snouts, but the rest of them were normal humans. There's definitely promise there, but it was 15 minutes. I basically walked down the road, shot a few people,
and that's it.
And then it does this thing where, which I'm guessing is a more frequent thing in the overall game, you get a message over the radio going, there's an emergence, I can't remember quite what it was called, but something's coming, you've got to get to cover. So I had to run into a building and all the sky goes like crimson red and there's giant strikes of electricity. That's where they finish the demo, but I'm guessing maybe they happen semi-frequently and you have to find cover.
Right.
Which I guess if all the other enemies are going into cover at the same time, if it's that smart,
that might be cool. That'd be quite cool,
yeah. I don't, like hardcore shoot, like realism shooters like that, never done a lot for me.
Yeah, I must say, kind of like the original Stalker dev team kind of split, I think, around the time of the first game, and some of them went and made the Metro series, and that was always kind of more what I wanted from that series. I know Jesse's really into Stalker, but I like the slightly more polished, slightly more cinematic. Mm. And I think Metro Exodus, that had got open environments that gave you all the choice of how you approached it. And that was more what I wanted. This, in many ways, at least from the 15 minutes I played, feels a bit of a lighter version of that. But I'm also sure it's much heavier in the ways that matter to its community.
I'm sure it's a game that benefits from long tutorials.
Oh, God, yeah. Like, again, like, not it's not the right game to demo in 15 minutes, to be quite honest. I wish I'd been given, an hour and a half.
Yeah, or just shown a presentation.
Yeah.
A rare occasion where hands-on maybe wasn't the best way. Al.
Yes.
RoboCop. That's not really a realist shooter, is it?
No, and also going back to the point you made of, Jank, there's a bit of that in there, but... Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure if it was intentional because it very much has the spirit of the old sort of films and TV shows and all that sort of
full 80s ultraviolence.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's interesting.
Yeah.
In that, and Emma wrote about it a couple of months ago, it's an FPS, but at about a quarter speed. Because, you know, every FPS that you normally play, you run and you duck behind cover, and it's about the fluidity of movement. This is the complete opposite of that. You walk at a very methodical pace and you're a bullet sponge. You just basically get shot to shit. And the one thing that Emma spoke about when she played it was that you're invincible. The level I played was a third of the way through the game, so it was tougher.
Mm-hmm.
Not literally invincible, right?
Are you actually No, you're not. But when she played it, it felt like that. Oh,
okay.
And I get what she was talking about, but at least now they're showing that there is a difficulty curve.
Yeah.
Or maybe she's just much better at the game than you.
She does play a lot of Counter-Strike. Yeah. She's good at shooters.
I don't think Counter-Strike would be a good kind of entry level for this. But there are points where you're completely surrounded by enemies and there is no way that you can take them out without taking damage.
Yeah.
But the weird thing is that it's important that you learn to use cover, which is really hard when you're this massive metal machine. So there's points where you're just kind of sidling to the side behind a pillar and then shooting. But it's imagine you trying to hide behind this very thin...
It's not going
to
happen, is it?
It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen, no. And he can only really walk at a pedestrian speed, right?
Well, he's got a couple of abilities. So he can... Okay. It's not running by any stretch, but it's slightly fast walking. Yes. And then he's got a dash attack, which basically allows him to get up close and punch people in the face, at which point their heads explode in the most comical manner.
I was going to ask, does it have some of that, proper ultraviolence to it?
Yes, it's got lots of that. There's not a lot of the humour that
you see.
Is
there any of the satire that the first film is known for?
Not that I've seen, no. And so in this mission, there's a bank heist that's going on and you turn up, but the sort of SWAT teams are already there. They're owned by OCP. which is the evil megacorp. Mm-hmm. And then you go into this sort of battle and they've got Eturionines next to them. But it's all about, even though you're on the same side, you're kind of pitting yourself against them. And whoever gets the most kills is like the winner of that sort of level challenge. And you get bonus XP, etc., etc. But it just feels like a very simple game. But the developer kept talking about these ideas that offered a lot of promise. So one thing, halfway through the demo, you capture a journalist who is inside this OCP office stealing data.
God.
I know, right?
Damn it.
And then you've got a choice. Like, do you have the empathetic side of your sight? No, we don't. You don't kill them at all.
It's not Judge Dredd.
No. And it's, and so, you know, are you the Alex Murphy and you empathise with them and you let them go because you can see the bigger cause is like, you realise that OCP is not good for the world? Mm-hmm. Or are you the robot and it's just like, well, you've broken the law, you're detained.
Mm-hmm.
Surely you're not the robot.
Well, I've seen what happens on both sides for this encounter. If you detain her, then the OCP SWAT team take her away, but also along with the evidence, and that's it. That's the end of that. If you let her go, then she's like, this is great. This is, you know, you're benefiting the city.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how. And so they keep talking, the developer talks about how your decisions that are made through the game are going to impact the ending.
Mm-hmm.
But I've seen absolutely zero evidence of that at
all. It's going to be the end of the game. The journalist comes up and says, cheers.
Well,
and that's the difference.
But that's it. I don't know how, you know, you've got to, it's a small developer.
Yeah.
So I don't imagine it's going to be this massive split path narrative. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it feels like you've got to have some consequence to your decisions.
Yeah.
It feels like it feels like a game that needs to be almost half an RPG for that to feel like it matters.
Yeah.
And it sounds like it's a shooter, like a full bore shooter.
Certainly from what the, and then he was very much admitting, like, you know, this is a combat focused level. Equally, the level that Emma played was combat focused.
Yeah.
And then the other side of it is that he's a policeman, mm-hmm. ultimately, and so that you do crime scene investigations. So there's going to be elements of...
But is that literally just zooming in objects and clicking on them?
I don't know, because they've not shown it. You know, if it's as deep as something
it's not
like...
It's going to be an Alien Noir, is it?
Or Arkham, great. But it feels a bit weird that it's, what, 3-4 weeks out. It's supposed to come out in September, and they've not shown
it. I get
why
they want that side to mix up, but, like, Robocop's not known to be a master detective,
no, he's not.
Is he? He's not.
Well, that's what I mean. He says, sure. Dead or alive, you're coming with me. It's like, not one second while I just take a note of what's going on here.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting. It makes you rethink the way you play first-person shooters.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But is that going to last the 15 to 20 hour
is that how long it's going
to
be?
I think that's what they said to Emma when she spoke to them.
I don't think I'd want to play a shooter that slow.
Not unless it unless it keeps mixing it up. But
I mean, maybe there's a bit like halfway through where they fit his, is it just a head that's left of Robocop? It's a head and a torso, isn't it? If they can fit him on like a frame that makes him faster, I'd be into it.
Well, and I think, like, as I said, obviously the Eturionines are on your side at that point. So are they always friendly? It's like, maybe not. So, you know, you'll get some interesting boss encounters.
Yeah.
Like, the biggest thing that we saw at the end was, like, this biker gang that starts circling you.
Right.
And, like, you can pick up, like, a massive sort of US-style trash can and throw it at them to knock them off the bikes. And then you can pick up the bikes to throw at the other things. And you've got special abilities for, like, bullet time to sort of take them out. It's got interesting stuff.
Yeah.
I just want to see more than the stuff that we've seen so far.
Teasing that stuff there without showing it, which is... a little worrying, but I've never been a huge like Robocop fan, so like it's not like I've been dying for this game forever, but I might check it out when it comes out.
Would you buy it for $1?
Probably. From one hulking chunky kind of slow shooter to another, Space Marine 2.
Yes,
Matt, you've been waiting for this one. Well, me and you have played this.
We have, yeah,
but you are of course much more of an expert in the Warhammer 40k realm than I am. You've been waiting for this game a while.
Mm-hmm.
Are you still looking forward to it?
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. So the first one was a pretty simple kind of like third-person shooter with a massive chainsword that you use to cut through orcs. And basically, it's been, 12 years, I think, since that came out? It was 2011. Right.
You know better than me.
Yeah, so it's been a long time. And that was made by Relic Entertainment, which was a bit weird because they made the Dawn of War games, which were strategy games. And then weirdly off the side, they made this third person, almost slightly Gears of War game. And this is made by Saber, who are the guys that made the World War Z games.
Oh, okay.
So those are the games that have got like that technology that can have 1,000 zombies on screen at any one time. Well, the tagline for Warhammer 40,000 is "In the darkness, in the grim darkness of the far future, there is only war."
Right.
And the technology that allows 1,000 enemies to be on screen at any one time is pretty good for a setting where literally war exists in all forms, all over. And so, yeah, this is a game where they've chosen the Tyranids as the enemy for this, which are, the way I've described them in my preview is basically if H.R. Giger designed the enemies from Starship Troopers.
Right.
So basically a load of very spiny bugs. And yeah, they come in hordes of, I guess, about 1,000, because that's what the tech can do. And basically you play an 8-foot-tall space marine in bright blue hulking armor, and you can charge right into that and absolutely decimate everything inside it with a giant chainsaw.
Right.
So it's kind of like, the thing I liked about it is it's definitely a sequel to that game in that it's quite an uncomplicated, almost campaign of the early 2000s. It's got that straightforward nature, at least in the mission that me and Cardi got to play. We only played one.
It was a good, like, 40-minute long mission.
It was, and you know, it's linear. You start in a big swamp where loads of these things are attacking an army that's already on the front line. You know, they're normal humans rather than your superhuman space marines, and they need space marine backup. And yeah, you come with your massive guns that fire giant cartridges that explode on impact, and you can thin out sort of like these hordes, and then you can just dive in with your chainsaw. So it's kind of very simple in its kind of basics, but you know, it's got the visuals. It looks like the images that are in the Warhammer source books.
Right.
It lives the fantasy, but the big difference here, I think, is you've got the tech, which means there's a lot more enemies on screen than you had before, so it's visually more spectacular. But I think it's balancing the kind of the old school, I just want to wade in and kill things. Like, none of the guns have got stats. You don't have to, like, mod them or do anything. You pick up a gun and you pull the trigger and the enemy explodes. It's very uncomplicated in that. But the melee's got, they haven't Dark Souls it by any means, but, like, you've actually got parries and strike backs and that sort of stuff.
There's one in particular where you just, if one of those Tyranids jumps, so you can just pull them out of the air, grab them by the neck and slam them onto the floor. That's
very good.
Yeah, it's very good.
It's got that, like, you know, you are the, you know, the Space Marines are bred to be some of the most powerful warriors in the universe. And when you've got one, like, trying to claw its way to you, you can just break its neck and pull it apart.
Yeah.
It's got that ultraviolet, you know, Warhammer's a thing of the 80s, right? It's got, like, RoboCop. It's got that horrendous, overly funny violence side to it. But the little ones that are coming in swarms, they're very easily torn apart. Like, you can just stomp on them. But they're all supported by these bigger enemies, which you have to fight in duels, because their arms are literally made of swords, like these Tyranid warriors. Yeah. And so that is much more of a, like, block, defend, dodge out of the way. But when you do enough damage, you can basically put your gun point blank into their mouths and fire it.
The executions are very good.
Yeah. You can then sort of, like, they'll let you then run your chainsaw up the middle of them. And then there must have been at least kind of 4 different animations I saw for it, where it's properly reveling in the fact that it's nasty and brutal.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's just kind of uncomplicated.
I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah.
I haven't really been following the game.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of expected to have a little bit more of the, I guess, the Warhammer depth, for want of a better word.
Yeah.
It's very, like, the touch point for me was Gears of War, without really needing to take cover, just because you're a massive hulking set of armor, basically.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, the main thing that it has is that kind of, like, and this is an evolution of what the original one did, is whilst you have this kind of, like, you know, they like to say it's impenetrable armor, but Space Marines die all the time. It's more of a fallacy to make them sound cool. You've got, when you do the executions, that's tops your armor bar up. So what I found was that kind of, like, when you're in the midst of it, you sort of feel like you're invincible, and then you realize that all of these hundreds of things are actually wearing your armor down.
Yeah.
And once the armor goes, they start attacking you and getting your health bar down.
Yeah.
But it's quite difficult to actually regen your health. Like, you need a health injector to do that, and they're not found very often. There's, like, a slight regain system where if you can do, like, those, like, point blank gun executions, that'll give you a little bit of health back. But I found in the back half of the demo, I was constantly fighting against the fact I got so little health that what I needed to do was keep doing the major executions to keep the armor built up, because the armor was what was keeping me alive. So what you're doing is you're using your guns to eliminate all of the little ones, charge in and get at the big ones, because the bigger the monster is, the bigger the Tyranids, the more it boosts your armor back up.
Right.
So what you want is, like, these little ones are only going to give you a smidge, which is probably going to get worn down in a couple of seconds because there's so many of them.
Those are my favorite sort of combat system ones. I think where attack is the best form of defense, like Doom does it, Control does it, then we can get health back in that is by killing enemies. I love that sort of that sort of combat.
It was one of these things where it's kind of like, when you're surrounded by devs, you know, that have built this game, that are watching you play it, you do feel a bit like, well, I want to look good while I'm playing it. It's part of the journalist experience. And so because I got like maybe like 5% health left, I was like, I'm going to look an absolute idiot here if I keep dying. And so I was just constantly searching out those things that would keep the armor topped up. I was like, if the armor is topped up, no one can hurt my health.
You're right, yeah.
But it then turned into like, this is a good rhythm. It's kind of like
how... It sounds like quite rhythm action-y in terms.
Yeah, it's a bit like, you know how in Doom, you're like, you're always on the edge.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So, you know, the Space Marines sort of, you know, I don't know if it necessarily invented the idea of like, doing an execution to get health back, but that's what the original game was like. It didn't necessarily have the armor points. It was like you just do executions and that tops your health bar up.
Yeah.
This evolution of it does feel in that Doom Glory Kills thing where it's like, okay, my health's going down. I need to find a big enemy that I can do a smack it in the face and tear its eyeball out. I'll get that. And it's got that to it. So that combined with the fact that the combat is a bit more in depth, there's parries, there's these execution moves, there's the need to dodge. Some of them have got like unblockable attacks that you need to work out around that. It's not like a Souls-like system by any means. It's much more accessible than that, but it's a modern melee system attached to a campaign design that we seem to have almost lost to a certain degree in the game space.
I had a fun time, and obviously I don't have a connection to Warhammer, but I just had a fun time playing. I was like, and again, the touchstone for me was more, like, I've seen Starship Troopers the plenty of times, and that's what it reminded me of, just...
Absolutely.
Like a good version of that. And like, if someone doesn't care about Space Marine at all, I'm like, I'm going to play through this game because we just don't really get these sort of games anymore.
Yeah.
Did you get a sense of, like, because obviously with thousands of Tyranids coming towards you, did you get a sense of how it might sort of change its pace, or is it going to be like that all the way through?
So this is the thing. I really don't want it to use that as a crutch. Yeah. Like, it's a really cool visual design, right? And you know, it's got a gameplay function there as well. But there was really only two main enemies I was fighting in that mission. It was the bigger ones, these warriors that support them, and then loads of what they call Hormigaunts. There were some, I think they're called Termigaunts, which are the ones they've got guns so they can fire at you at range, but most of the time it felt I was engaging them melee. But there's loads of different Tyranids in the tabletop game that you can use for different purposes. Like, some of them are colossal walking tanks, basically, you know, bred in tanks. And so I really want to know how...
There are loads of bread in town.
Shush you. But I want to know how that system scales with lots of different things. Yeah. Like, towards the end of that mission, we had to, like, climb up a tower. And then at the top were these kind of things. You know, you do some little mini games to get a generator running or whatever you're doing there. And there were hundreds of flying ones in the sky. But they felt like they were there at that time for kind of almost like set design rather than anything. I want to know what's it like when they start flying.
As you get closer and suddenly, you know, you catch their interest or whatever.
Yeah. And it's like, you know,
horrible.
Yeah. And the Space Marines are, you know, for Warhammer players, like, if you don't play Space Marines, it's a bit annoying because there are so many fucking Space Marine designs that come out every year because they're the most popular faction. But that means there's surely a load of weapons that I didn't see that will be suited to fighting lots of different types of Tyranids. And if they build on that mission after mission, and I sort of hope there's almost a bit of the, like, Call of Duty Titanfall element there, where it's like, in this mission, the big thing is you get this gun, and this gun is going to be useful against this weird freak of a Tyranid.
Yeah.
And if they can keep doing that mission after mission, I think it will be in safe hands. Mm-hmm. If it's just hordes, possibly it might run out of steam halfway through.
I'm happy that you're still happy.
And it looked great considering it's like...
Yeah, it looked great. I mean, we talked about this before, like, Focus publishing this game, and they've kind of found this niche of, like, B-tier, like, not quite AAA games. This one is borderline AAA.
Yeah.
Like, it looks amazing. It feels great.
You can say A. I think B-tier.
Or triple B.
Never heard that.
B-A-B-B-B-A-B-B.
Stop speaking in binary or whatever.
I don't know why I'm doing it. Should we just talk about a different game? I want to talk about Alan Wake 2.
Ooh.
Very excited for this game. Mm-hmm. Both me and you, Matt, have seen a full mission from this game that was shown at Gamescom. 40-minute Alan Wake mission. So if you've not up to speed, Alan Wake 2 features two protagonists, Alan Wake, of course, and Sarah Anderson. Sarah Anderson is an FBI agent, very much looks like the true detective side of the game. Alan Wake's, until now, we've not really known what Alan's side of the game would be. And let me tell you, it's weird. Remedy, they love being weird. This is probably as weird and as meta and just frankly odd as they've got in any of their games. It's so this mission takes place in the Dark Place, which is where Alan is basically a nightmare version of New York that he's kind of created from his own writing. And it looks absolutely like I'm not, you know, overstating how good this game looks. Like when you walk out, you kind of walk up some stairs and out into this version of New York for the first time. Rarely have I seen anything in a game that looks this good.
Did you cry?
Oh, I was bawling, absolutely bawling. It looks like 70s New York, like Taxi Driver does. It has those same like lighting effects. The just like the smog and like the just the amount of paper swirling around the street. It looks like I could go on about the details of these streets for a long time, but instead, let's talk about the actual level, which is kind of taking that original Alan Wake gameplay of flashlight and gun. And, you know, burning, but essentially burning the shadow off of something before shooting them. But then it's also got this new layer of puzzle gameplay, which was never in the first, which is almost like, the way I worded it in my preview was like small, like, tastes of, like, Crack in the Slab from Dishonored 2 or Effect and Course and Timefall, in as much as you can take, using this lamp, take areas of light from the level and place them in specific other places of the level to change the layout. So, for example, the first time they tell you how to use this, your objective is find the entry to Caldera Street Station. And you're just looking on the street and you see the sign for the station, but there's no entrance. There's just a pile of like rubbish bags on the street.
Yeah.
So what you do is go down the street a bit, take the light from a lamp, like a big street light, walk back and put the light in a nearby street lamp.
Like Dumbledore does at the beginning of Harry Potter.
a little bit like that. And then suddenly this scene that was just some trash... we're in New York, I'm going to say trash bags that are on the floor, turns into a subway street entrance. And you can now walk down there.
Right.
But there's layers to this. It gets deeper as you go further in the subway. It's quite a hard thing to explain in words. How, like, to see it is one thing, to try and explain it is another. But basically, you can then use inspirations from seeing visions that create plot points in Alan's writer's room. The writer's room is essentially a menu you can walk around in.
You've completely lost it.
It's so hard to explain.
I don't think it's that hard.
Really?
So basically, you sometimes see things. Well, so you'll see like visions in the world, which are kind of like, so for example, in this, it's you're seeing two other characters talk to each other in visions.
Yep.
And that, because Alan Wake is a novelist, right? Like that's his deal. What they're talking about inspires him. It's like, oh, I could make a new plot point for my book, which is apparently around me.
Right.
And you use that plot point. That's almost like in his head as an inventory item.
Right.
And then when you get to a location that's almost like a barrier point, he can use that plot point and go, oh, I can write this new plot into the level.
Yeah.
Right.
And it'll turn like a blocked off wall into a corridor.
Right.
At first, that's kind of simple because it's just you have one choice. Later on this level, they show basically you collect these plot point inspirations. So he can have four, let's say, in his inventory. And then you go to his writer's room on the plot board and you can kind of plug any of those ideas. So say one is Death Cult, another is, I don't know what, I can't remember.
Death Cult one was the most, there's a lot of Death Cult.
They love Death Cult, apparently. But basically, you can then slot any of those four in and it'll alter the scene you're in. Only one of those will be the solution to the way forward. But the other three might grant you extra story info or some sort of like environmental storytelling aspect.
So only one of them will, what?
Get you the way forward, and you have to work out which one kind of, you have to, a bit of like puzzle detective work, like which one is the most relevant inspiration point to this scene I'm in.
So the example, one of the, I think the best example of this was that you, because you're in the subway tunnels, but it's all like half demolished basically, and you find a crashed subway car that's clearly blocking, you can't get on, and the doors are kind of like sealed shut. And yeah, there's, I think he's got maybe four different plot points at that point, and you can plug any of those in, and you might see something new there because he's written it in. But is it Death Cult opens that one up?
I think Death Cult puts all these weird symbols onto the train and opens a door next to it, which you need to go into to get the inspiration point that is the real one you need to use.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're not punished for using the
wrong
one.
No, you can experiment. Okay. You'll always find something, I think, like, whether minimal. It'll change the scene and something will, you'll learn something. But yeah, we chose, well, we didn't choose. They chose the correct one for this train. And it's quite a horrific scene. You're basically looking at what this death cult did to all these people on this train, which is burn them alive. And you're walking through this train of just piled up charred bodies and hearing lots of screams. It was quite horrific.
Wow.
Like, it was like, this game is, it is a horror game, if we haven't said that already. Like, you know, and for the most part, it's like survival horror, like Resi style horror from the looks of it. But this dark place is weird and horrible. And like, that was actually quite like, it took me back. I was like, this is genuinely.
Yeah.
You're not in a way of like, you know, it wasn't like, you know, clutching pearls or anything. But I was like, you know, this is genuinely.
But it's one of those things that like, you can sort of tell when you reach it, you know that like the correct plot point is the thing that's going to open the door on the back of the subway. And that's going to be the tunnel to your next thing. But the fact that like it instantly sort of, because it changes almost like instantly. It's like a flash and then the scene is there. And then for that to be a train that's painted in like death cult symbols and everybody's like Pompeii style inside.
Yeah.
And you can just hear them shrieking as you walk through.
It's quite a bit. Like, and we'll say this is a horror game, but yet still there's all the bizarre oddness that Remedy bring to all their games. If you play any games, you know the sort of, I don't want to just say the Finnish weirdness, but they describe themselves like the Finnish oddities that they put in their game. Like, I don't even know where we start with the Alex Casey stuff. But, like,
oh, this is so good.
This happens kind of star this level. Like, you walk down an alleyway and Alan Wake bumps into a policeman who is. So, let's get this right. So, it is Sam Lake's face, who is the creative director of Remedy, who was the original face of Max Payne.
Yes.
And James McCaffrey was the voice of Max Payne in those games.
Yes.
In this game, in Alan Wake 2, it's Sam Lake's face and the voice of James McCaffrey, but playing a police detective called Alex Casey, who is the character of the hardboiled detective books that Alan Wake writes. He's essentially Max Payne in all but name. He's wearing a leather jacket. He has like a floral like paisley tie on. Yeah. He has the gun. He does the face.
Right.
But he's called Alex Casey. It's just them having lots of little meta fun with what they can, because, of course, there is this Remedy connected universe.
Yes, exactly.
Which is, at the moment, Alan Wake and Control. Those are the only things that are part of this connected universe. Max Payne, they don't know the rights to Max Payne, that's Rockstar's.
Yes.
Max Payne is not involved in the Remedy connected universe, nor is Quantum Break, although in this level, Sean Ashmore, who played the lead character in Quantum Break, pops up just in a room,
so
says, "Hello, Alan," and he's playing a character called Tim Breaker, which is basically Time Breaker. They're just having
much
fun.
I was
going to
say, they're basically pushing it as far as they possibly can.
They know. I just love how they just go for it. And bless them, they may not sell millions, but I'll love it.
Well, honestly, this game has probably had the most promotion out of any Remedy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And from the demo that I saw, was it during Summer
Games
Fest? Yeah. I was like, this looks really good.
Yeah, yeah.
And it sounds like that seemed to be more like jump scare. This feels like it's a lot more
More weird. Like, it's still got a lot of Twin Peaks that Alan Wake, the original, had by the looks of it. But, like, I will say, like, they've even themselves used Resident Evil as a touch point, like, going to survival horror. Like, it's kind of more Silent Hill to me. And that's what people should be a bit cautious jumping this game thinking, I'm going to play Resident Evil, because by the looks of it, it's not, you know, flurry of enemies, the action-packed sort of thing you might expect from Resident Evil. It looks, as I wrote in my review, this looks like a much more like cerebral approach to the genre.
Right.
It's much more puzzle and tone-based than any Resident Evil.
We watched, was it about 40, it was a 40-minute demo we watched, and definitely the combat is clearly inspired by the Resident Evil remakes. You know, the camera angle,
yep.
the way you hold the gun.
And it looked like it takes quite a few bullets to take down, just an end.
Yeah, like the zombies do, particularly in Resident Evil 2. Yeah. Like, they take quite a lot. And it's even sort of like the design of the hood has got like the Resident Evil 4 vibe to it. You know, that sort of circle that runs around your ammo counter is your health and stuff like that. So it's clearly using it as a touch point, but combat was a very minor bit of what we saw. Right. So I think that this is a game. Whereas the original Alan Wake is basically combat all the time,
it's
when you're playing
based combat. Yeah. And that is what I love the original Alan Wake, but that is the one thing that has aged poorly and wasn't even great at the time, was the actual gameplay of it.
It was like, because obviously at the time they were action developers, right? They'd only made the Max Payne game. I guess they've made a racing game, haven't they?
Death Valley.
Yeah. But they were known for action games, and Alan Wake was sort of a little bit Max Payne but supernatural Stephen King-y.
Yeah.
Whereas this is like, they've thrown all of that out the window. Like, it's, I think it's probably, if it's good, you could say maybe it's actually found the identity it should have maybe had all the time.
Yeah. Oh, I can't wait for this game.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just want to play it. We're only 2 months away? They delayed it by 10 days, I think.
27th of October now. God. Right in time for Halloween.
Exactly. Perfect. Got a few more to talk about. We'll maybe spend a little bit more time on the next one, but then we'll speed up from there, because we can't be here all day, because we need dinner, don't we?
We do need dinner.
Although I do enjoy the fun zone. I don't enjoy the hunger zone. What's the funger zone, though? Is that what we're in right now?
What are you talking?
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
About.
Let's talk about Black Myth Wukong. Matt, this game is, every time anything new about Black Myth Wukong comes out, not only do we get lots of views on YouTube, but it looks better and better. It looks like, anytime I've seen it in action, it looks like it should play incredibly. Does it play incredibly?
Yes. I've still got a few games to see. Like, for full transparency, we're recording on a Thursday. I've got games to see tomorrow. I don't think those games are going to necessarily beat what I've seen today. So I think Black Myth might be my game of the show.
Wow.
It is real good.
That is good to hear, because I think, obviously, we've seen so much. But without actually playing it, you don't know if it's going to stand up.
Well, we've been watching it. How many years has it been? It's always been around this time of year, right? That they've shown a new part of it. And we've seen kind of like different bosses and stuff like that. Like, a lot of the stuff that we've seen was finally playable. This demo build, they gave us half an hour. And the demo was split into, like, the bosses that you've seen, you can now finally fight. If you want to go and fight those, you can. But they had kind of like a Gamescom exclusive sort of bit, which was you can play a, I don't know, I'd hesitate to say level. They're not sort of games that split in
like a chapter. Level
or, but yeah, like a chapter. And this was basically kind of like, I have no story context, so it's obviously, it's based on Journey to the West. But I'm playing Monkey, and, you know, he's got his kind of staff, and that's, you know, the centre part of it. It's a game about hitting things with a staff.
But it's hard as nails, Souls-like, right?
But it is.
A fun, love play as a monkey game.
No, yeah, so I'm sorry, Al, I know that Souls-likes are not necessarily your jam, but this is, and it is... it's a proper it's not Souls like in the way that what FromSoft have built, but it is clearly within that mold. It feels very different, but it has the same demands of you. You've got to be quick.
We don't really know how like the world or the levels are designed, but we do. Like, you know, it's got the punishing like spectacle bosses, which you expect from those.
And, you know, you go to these little areas where you burn incense, and that's where you kind of like choose your skills, but that respawns the enemies around you when you rest. You've got a gourd which refills your health, but you can only use it so many times. All of the Souls like language is there.
Yeah.
But what I would say is kind of like, this is a game where you've got this staff, and I can't tell, but it seems like it might be the only weapon in the game is this staff. But you don't have a shield, and there's no block ability. So it's actually immediately kind of like in league with Bloodborne in terms of like, that's the game that doesn't have a block out of the FromSoft. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't feel anything like Bloodborne. It actually kind of feels closer to Sekiro to play.
Yeah.
It is lightning quick. And, you know, it's been a little while since I played Sekiro. You know, it was the start of last year. So it took me a little while to get used to that pace again. But once I got into it, it's got a rhythm. Like... Right. I think one of the worries that kind of people have about kind of like these emerging Chinese developers is that maybe kind of like their first games are not quite going to
get the visuals down, don't they?
Yeah, but sometimes they can feel a bit stiff and maybe feel a little bit like they're inspired by different things to us, aren't they?
Yes.
Sort of like so Western development and Japanese development are two kind of like steps almost. It feels above, but what this can necessarily be, but. These game science guys definitely know what they're doing here. It is slick and fast, and all of those kind of YouTube views, I think, will probably pay off, basically.
Nice.
So what I will say is the environment they gave me to play didn't necessarily inspire much sort of like inspiration when it came to environment design. It's kind of fairly standard in that like you started in an area which had got an area to rest and reset my skills. And then did the sort of classic design where, like, you go forward on a path and then that path branches out, but those paths sort of... Either one goes to a dead end where there's, a chest that you can open, or maybe they come back together later and then they branch out again. And
Oxbow Lakes.
Yes, if you insist.
Okay.
And I wouldn't say there was necessarily anything particularly inspiring about those sort of areas. There was these like statues that had collapsed that I could draw energy out
of. Were you getting like there was any like world, like environmental storytelling or world building? That's
no,
what the Souls game
yeah,
is.
Yeah, so that's the thing is kind of like in Souls, like, you know, particularly when you think of Bloodborne, you're walking through the streets of Yharnam and almost every building is telling its own sort of little story. Whereas this, I was just kind of, you know, you could have said it was a bit like the Grand Canyon in many ways. It was like very dusty, very orange mesa structures. But it had got like these collapsed statues which had got like glowing eyes and you could draw an energy out. I don't know what that energy is for. Like, this was an instance where there's no developer sat with you. So I couldn't tap someone on the shoulder and go, can you explain to me what the hell's
going on
here?
Yeah.
But obviously that's something part of the wider gameplay loop. But yeah, that's dotted with enemies, which were fun to take down. Some of them have got shields, so you had to break through the shield before.
Yeah.
But very similar to what I think people will know. It's just essentially you have to dodge rather than block because there's no block. But then you came to a path where it split. And if you went to the left, you could fight an optional boss. You went into a very classic, like, you're in a massive open environment. And it's like, okay, there's going to be a boss here. It's that big to allow the boss to land. Or you could go up a set of stairs and you went through a big set of mystery doors that took you into a sandstorm where there was the main boss of the area.
Right.
The side boss was essentially a giant rock monster that had got kind of like its front sort of like rhino style arms were kind of like it would stomp them into the ground and make big shockwaves and stuff like that. The main boss was what I would describe as like a pig dragon hybrid monster.
Okay.
That was about sort of 12 feet tall. And it has got two giant, for lack of a better word, electric maracas.
I do like
electric maracas.
This game has got like, it's definitely kind of like, I guess in universe takes itself seriously. Like it's a dangerous world, but yes. It's got like, Journey to the West is a storybook, yes, right? Like, yeah. within the Chinese culture. And it's got that kind of, like, the bosses that you could have also fought as well. Like, at the start, I had to fight, like, a giant centipede. And then Destin from our US team was playing next to me, and he was fighting, like, a big tiger in a lake of blood.
Right.
But they're quite, like, playfully creative, kind yeah. of, like, you know, they're big animals in this way. But, yeah, this guy's got two... I say, all I can describe it as is big electric maracas. And I was watching Destin fight this tiger, and he was super quick, like really, really lightning fast. This guy was slower, but it was almost like the trick to it was rhythm, because as he starts slamming these maracas down,
yeah.
these big shockwaves start coming out from the ground, but it would be like one, one, two, one, two, three, one, right. one, two, and you have to leap over them. Like things like Hi-Fi Rush does mm-hmm. this, right, with some of its things. So it's got a bit of that rhythm to it, which makes sense in a game that's so fast that you do have to build your rhythm as you, yeah. you play. But the kind of like, the actual core of the fighting is that you've got this staff, and instead of swapping weapons, you kind of switch where you hold the staff. There's like, you can hold it from the bottom, and it's then kind of like a lunge weapon, like you're striking out from distance with it. But then you can push like up on the D-pad and you hold it more in the center, and then it's kind of a whack with both ends yeah. kind of quick. And then you can hold it another way and you use it as a big slamming weapon.
Right.
And so it was kind of learning how...
Almost like stances or something.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of, I guess almost to the degree a little bit like what Jedi Survivor does, right? Yeah. And that you can have your double-ended lightsaber, which would be the hold in the middle.
Yeah.
Or more of the kind of like the heavy saber, which was like the whack. So there's definitely, if you've played other games like this, there's a familiarity.
Yeah.
But it was getting used to that and kind of like learning how that if you did a couple of attacks that were light, it would build up this meter, which would then... you'd be able to do a heavier attack. But that would be like, you can slam the pole into the ground and then swing yourself round on the pole. And every time you do a swing, you're doing damage each time you hit the enemy.
It sounds like you are playing as
a monkey.
A monkey, yeah. Not just, you know, a human that looks like a monkey, you know.
Yeah.
You can do those weird things.
Yeah.
I'm very excited. Like, it's always nice when we see these games for so long and then you actually play them and like, oh, it is what I wanted it
yeah,
to be.
It's super slick. And then you've got magic abilities as well. So on the trigger, you hold that. A bit like, you know, how in Assassin's Creed, you hold the trigger and then press the face buttons to do cool things. And just to give some very brief examples, like one of them, you click your fingers and an army of monkeys turn up.
Right.
Like, it's like four clones of you, basically. So that's kind of like helps you out in a tough moment. You can, there's one that was just immobilize the enemy. But if you hit them, it brought them out of it. But like, if you suddenly need to get back and take a health potion or something like that, that was useful. There was one that turned you into, I guess, like a fire monkey god, where you suddenly, you get a second health bar. And as long as that health bar is up, you can stay as this guy. But your staff turns into a double-bladed glaive that's on fire.
Right.
But you're slower and, like, more deliberate with the move, so it's a different move set. There was one where you could put a ring of fire and things would be scared if they wouldn't come to you in the fire.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, I'm excited to see where, like, I hope there's loads of weird abilities as well. Like, like yeah, I thought it was super slick.
Nice.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, ooh, I think Alan Wake 2 is still mine. I didn't play Black Myth, so I can't really say.
Yeah, see, I think if I played Alan Wake 2, I might have come away saying that Alan Wake 2 was my thing.
No one's got to bloody play.
Yeah.
I've only played RoboCop. So. I mean, that's not my game of the show.
You have seen one other game, though. Should we briefly talk about Nightingale, Alex?
Well, yeah, I didn't get to play it.
Yeah, no, yeah, yeah. Exactly.
And they didn't show a whole lot off.
Mm-hmm.
So they demonstrated some of the survival mechanics. It's very much like any other survival game you would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to go and find sticks to start a fire,
right?
And then you've got to get stuff to cook, and you know, and then build a shelter, and da 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 da. And then,
does it look like you've got to eat every 10 minutes? Like,
so I did ask the question about what's the balance between having fun with your friends. So would I, or is it hardcore survival?
Yeah.
And he said it's definitely more about like enjoying the experience with your friends. And so, you know, survival is going to be threaded all the way through. You will need to eat. You will need to rest. And then also you'll need to, like, depending on the environment, if it's a snowy place, you'll need to dress up.
Okay.
And so you'll need to kind of, you know, hunt animals to get their hide to build
clothes. Oh, it's just like Zelda then. You love that.
It didn't feel like that at all. No.
Yeah.
Well, apart from you like, chop down trees.
Survival games never do a lot for me. They're one of my least favourite genres, I won't lie to you. But the one thing that has got me intrigued in this game is the like aesthetic. The Victorian... It looks very nice. It has a style to it.
Yes. It's... Well, they describe it as like Victorian gas lamp fantasy, I think, is the how they they call it.
It needs less words there, doesn't it?
And it is... So you start off by building your estate, which is your basically home base. And you start off by just, you know, getting a bunch of wood and building this kind of log cabin. But they demonstrate some of the sort of more extravagant things. And it's like, you know, Chinese pagodas and like huge buildings. And obviously, the more you invest time into that, the better the weapons you can create, because you need to create crafting benches and then bigger stuff and evolve that way. But like I say, they skipped across a lot of that stuff. And then we went to a kind of a battle in one of the realms, and so as you go through, you earn these cards that basically serve up realms, and you mix them up. It's like, okay, I want this snowy world with this kind of level, and then it randomly procedurally generates a world.
Okay, that's cool.
Pulling in, you know, the criteria that you've kind of suggested. Anyway, so the battle that we saw was like three people versus this sun god, and most of the animals, creatures, sun god, they're there to coexist with you. And so he offered him a gift, which was a spyglass. The giant wasn't very happy. He wasn't very happy with the spyglass. So it all kicked off. And then it just turned into a massive fight, which it's kind of interesting. But at the same time, I was like, yeah, what's going on here?
It's one of these that I like, Carly. I love the look of it. I think it's got it's an aesthetic that really speaks to me.
It reminds me of like before they made anything about adaptations. What in my head the His Dark Materials books look like?
Yeah, I get that. Yeah. I don't know. I can't wish that it was just an RPG because like not every studio's got the money to do an RPG, but. I kind of, you know how like people talk about the fact that like Fallout 76 finally sort of turned into the game that it should have been, and I know that's got much more quests with characters that you can speak to. It's just you have to do it with other people, and there's kind of like the survival stuff. I kind of wish it was more like that, but also I can't ask for Bethesda grade like money from a smaller developer.
And so there is a story arc in there, so you know, a natural beginning and end. But they did say that a lot of it is about player freedom. And they're equally, so I saw it, you know, played with three people. It doesn't scale depending on whether you're playing with two or with more or however. And so, like, you can, like, rather than your character developing, your gear develops. And so you've got a gear stat. And so if you're at level 200 and I'm at level 100, you can share gear to sort of, like, even it out. And so you've got a better chance of survival.
Yeah.
I think it's got some interesting concepts. It just, I don't really understand how it all gels together as an interesting experience now.
I still like the look of it, but yeah, I doubt I'll have people that want to consistently play it, and I won't want to play it by myself. But
there was one bit that is exactly like Zelda, like when the sun giant kind of does its big attack. It's got this medallion on the front, which is its weak spot, as same as the head, and it blasts out these like burning rays, which sets the ground on fire. And you've got this sort of like Victorian umbrella, which you ride up to sort of go that's up high. And I'm like, well, that's basically Zelda, but with an umbrella rather than a
paraglider. I'll continue to look at this game. Whether I actually ever play it is another question. I'm intrigued by it.
Yeah.
Should we briefly, let's go through two last ones before we go for dinner, because we're hungry. Banishers is a game I've played and you've seen me play.
I did watch
you This is another Focus published game. So if Space Marine is kind of, I don't know, B-tier Gears, is that fair? It's, you know, if a Playtale is sort of like B-tier Last of Us, I guess Banishers is kind of a little bit B-tier God of War-ish.
Mixed with some vague The Witcher aspirations.
Mixed with a little bit of Witcher, but also, more importantly, mixed with, and this is going to sound weird, Life is Strange, because it's developed by Don't Nod, who are the developers
yeah.
of Life is Strange. So what it does is it kind of blends the sort of the lore and world of like a Witcher. So like you play as a banisher who is like a goat, basically an exorcist, a ghost banisher. He goes around towns in 17th century America and just, yeah, rids evils of like curses on towns. So that's where the witch comes in. But the combat is very much kind of a God of War.
Right.
Even like the, you look at the camera and you're like, it's that tight third person melee of light, heavy attacks.
And the environment level seem to have a little bit of like,
that not as linear.
Good. Yeah, not as good as what God of War does, but.
And some environmental puzzles to boot as well. So you do this level, we played one mission and it's going through this fairly linear level, doing melee attacks. And then by the end, there's a boss fight, which is kind of, it's like a God of War boss. It's kind of, it's got three stages. It's a big bony wooden ghost beast thing, which you kind of have to, if you have to do your dodges, you can use your critical hits. You bring it down eventually. Wasn't like a Souls boss. Wasn't that difficult, but maybe they get, this was like the first boss in the game is what I was told. So it might get more severe. It's after that boss fight where it kind of sets itself apart is where basically on this mission, you'll have learned what has happened to this town, the people in it. And you're kind of building a picture of what the curse is here and maybe who's at fault for it. And at the end, you're given a choice. Do you want to be merciful and, you know, forgive the people that are responsible for this? Or do you want to, you know, take the more bloodthirsty route and kill them?
Yeah.
So it affects the story in that way, but it also affects the story in another crucial way, which is, I've not really explained it yet. You play as this character called Red, who has a lovely Scottish voice. You don't hear many Scotsmen leading games, do you? Mm-hmm. But the problem is, his lover, I don't know if it's his wife, his romantic partner, Antia, is dead. She's a ghost.
Right.
Who follows you around in spectral form, and you can switch to her at any time in combat, and she has some cool, like, kind of magic abilities. So the whole thrust of this game is you're kind of looking at to go out and avenge her death, but also bring her back to life. And
why is he not banishing her?
Well, because he loves her.
Oh.
She's not. Still. She's a friendly ghost, like Casper.
Also, it's worth pointing out that her spectral form, like, is sentient. Like, they can have conversations, whereas all the other ghosts are definitely. Woo.
Yeah, they're very much chatting. They're still on good terms. But basically, it's the whole crux of this is like, are you going to make the choices that are kind of good for this world, and probably the thing the better person would do?
Yeah.
But that will basically contribute to her ascension to the afterlife and you'll never see her again. Or do you make the quote-unquote bad choice and be more, like, ruthless a person? And that will contribute to basically bringing her back to life and resurrecting her. Oh. And that's kind of the crux of the story is, are you going to choose the good path and get your, and, you know, say goodbye to your wife? Or choose the bad path and get her back?
It's the what is it, the one thing of one versus the thing of many.
Yeah. And from what I've played, it was fun enough. It kind of lacked both the sort of real great combat that something like God of War has and the writing to match it. But what it did make up for in is like a sense of tone. I believe that central relationship quite a bit.
Yeah.
I don't know how long this game is, how long it can sustain it, and I don't know how much it will evolve gameplay-wise, but I had a decent time with it. I think it's out in November, Banishers. It's not really got... It's called... The full name is Banishers, Ghosts of New Eden.
Right.
So it's kind of... It's got a good tone. Like, they mentioned... It's kind of... They like... And they said magic worse than I is. They referenced The Village, the film, which I love. It's kind of... Not a guilty pleasure, because a lot of people don't like the film. I love that film. And the kind of... The feel of it, that kind of... Sort of like... I don't know, like weird, like almost like bone monsters in an old timey forest.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm intrigued in this game, whether I'll find time to actually play when it comes out, because there's so many games coming out.
Yeah.
It's the sort of game that I would absolutely play if you got to kind of, like, you know, sometimes there's nothing out around kind of March or April.
Yeah.
I would play if it came out there, because the setting and the style looks cool. It's got that sort of like grubbiness to it.
They told us it was like 15 to 20 hours, which seems like it could overstay as well.
Yeah, I think that's... It sounds like it needs to be about the length of Life is Strange, but it's not.
But yeah, I'm intrigued by it. Yeah, for sure. The last game I'm going to talk about, if you can all talk about this game briefly, Matt, I'll be impressed. I'm going to sneeze. Or am I? I'm going to sneeze. Oh, no, I'm not. What the hell is Where Winds Meet?
I don't bloody know. So Where Winds Meet was, it was kind of like one of the games that sort of caused a stir at ONL last year. It kind of like came out of nowhere. We said that it looked like Ghost of Tsushima, which I think there is definitely some truth to that. But crucially, not Japan, it's China. It's 10th century China, made by a Chinese developer.
Right.
And this year, the developer, Everstone, were here again, but they were like, you can play it now. So I went along to play it, and I'm a little bit confused. Right. It is a bit like Ghost of Tsushima.
Yeah.
In that it's an open world kind of action game where you have a sword, obviously kind of like the swords of 10th century China are slightly similar to samurai swords. And it's got a little bit of that quite slick combat design. It's not a Souls-like, so throw that out of your mind. Like, you've got enough health to batter your way through right. several enemies and stuff like that. It's much more like a open world action game in that design. But it also feels like that I didn't expect necessarily into the players. It's got a bit of the Zelda about it in the okay. kind of like, there's not a lot of direction. I don't know if that's because the UI's not finished yet or not, but I found it very difficult to know. They just dumped me in the middle of like this world and just off you go. And so I just went and potted around a bit. It's a bit like I found an enemy camp, which, you know, is a bit like a bokoblin camp yeah. to a certain thing, and just yeah. battered a few enemies. I then went off and I found kind of like a tablet that had got a riddle on it, and then I realised that there were some little kind of sculptures around that matched what the riddle was, so right. I arranged those, and it gave me some stuff that I assume is useful if you know what's going
Korok
on.
Korok leaf.
Yeah. I went to a town that was almost like Pompeii, that was full of just statues, but there was one of them was a man that desperately wanted to be a statue like all of these other people.
Yeah.
And I used a magic ability to turn him into a stone when he was matching the shape of other characters. So when he matched the shape, I had to turn him into stone.
Gotcha.
But Jesse was playing next to me, and you know, I'm doing this, and I ended up in a little town, and there was a bounty board, a lot of these kind of traditional kind of RPG elements. Although what the bounty I picked up was to find a runaway goose.
Very hot fuzz.
Wow.
Yeah. But I look to my right where Jesse's playing. He's fucking flying.
Not sure you're playing the right game.
Well, this is it. I was like, well, where's that come from? It's not like Zelda, like, you know, on a little paraglider. Yeah. He is full Chinese martial arts style, like flying through the air by doing all of these weird like moves across. And then I look behind me and Ezra from IGN Japan's there. God knows what he was doing, but it didn't look like anything I was doing.
He was playing the game.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm quite confused as to what the overall like tone and vibe of the game is. And it feels like it's a open world game in which it's probably got quite a lot of variety in what you can do. But I'm very confused as to where it all comes together. So, like, I think there's like
You all started at the same point.
Yeah, yeah. So wow. What we did, we all played a prologue, which is much more like understandable in that, like, you start in a prologue where that's very Ghost of Tsushima. You're on the back of a horse, and it's got the camera angle of yeah. that opening to Ghost of Tsushima. And you're using a bow and arrow to kill people around you, and then enemies come up the side, and you've got to deflect their blows. Weirdly, you're carrying a baby at this point. I think the game's got a weird sense of humour that it wants to okay. get across. There's an attack that you can call a goat in and have the goat attack enemies. And there's a bit where you can just shout at a bear with like a megaphone.
Shout at a bear? With a megaphone?
You pull a megaphone out and you shout into it.
Where
did
you say that?
10% China.
Okay.
It's weird. It's very, very weird.
Is it good?
I don't know. I really don't know.
It's very hard to base that on, like, yeah. all of it. Because I've not been to Gamescom since yeah. 2017.
Mm-hmm.
You forget what it's like to just be dropped in front of a game mm-hmm. for 30 minutes mm-hmm. and then go, form an opinion. And yeah. it's just like, I barely know what the hell is going on.
Because the prologue was obviously much more of a, you know, I'm not saying it's a Sony standard game, but it was like, it was linear, it was cinematic, it was yeah. getting you in. And then it went into, like, It pushes time forward, and then it turns out that that guy that you were playing as is the uncle of your character, and then you go into a character creation screen where you create your version of this guy's niece or nephew.
Yeah.
wildest character creation screen I've ever seen. Like, you can literally, every single part of your body you can change. The one that I wrote down because I was like, why the hell can I do this, is the bit that runs in between your nostrils. Yes. So you can change the angle and size of that.
How many nipples can I have?
Oh, I didn't look that far. But yeah, like,
or, but maybe you can just have giant nipples like wagon wheels or something like that.
Maybe. I don't even want to think of it. But the weird thing there is, like, I think I wasn't quite aware of how much it's an RPG. It's not just an open world game, it's an RPG. So you have your stats screen.
Yeah.
But these stats, well, I'm used to kind of like dexterity, strength, right, yeah, kind of endurance. Yeah. This was like erudition and music and sight and charm. And so I get charm, that's a bit like charisma,
yes,
right?
Yes, that makes sense.
But erudition and imagination.
What, and what's it, sight? How does that, does it blur the game if you're low on sight?
No idea. One was memory, and it was like, maybe memory is like, kind of like, you know, in Elden Ring, for example, like you can only remember so many spells at a single time, so that expands.
Almost like
spells.
An inventory.
Yeah.
Yes.
So maybe that's what that is, but... Well, and physique was obviously, that's got to be to do with your strength, your physical strength. But what's an erudition build?
I have no idea.
And so my questions are now is like, well, does the game support these weirder choices? So I started looking, like, I must admit, like, I didn't know a huge amount of this game going in. And when it came out, I started looking back at what we've written about it. And Matt Kim last year did an interview with the devs where they said, basically, there's sort of a job system in the game where you can decide to be what it sounds like, whatever the hell you want.
Right.
Their examples were you could, like, specialise in medicine and become a kind of, like, a doctor.
A doctor, yeah.
Or you could become an architect. And so there must be a building system in it.
Right. It sounds like an MMO hidden in an open world RPG. Well,
because MMOs have a lot of this. Like, because MMOs are designed to be played for so long, they always have like a job system where you can be kind of like a herbologist, right? And you can have, like, while your friends aren't around and you're waiting for them to turn up for a raid, you can go and tend to your garden.
Yeah.
But this sounds like, I don't know if it's supposed to be a bit more involved than that, because it feels like it's supposed to be a single player, but... I opened a menu and it was just like multiplayer. Right. So obviously that wasn't here at Gamescom, but there is clearly a multiplayer of some description. Wow. But it's not an MMO, it's an open world.
I kind of appreciate that it's just bonkers. Like, it's kind of the opposite when we're talking about all this like new wave of Chinese games. Like, it's like the opposite of Black Myth, which seems very focused, knows what it wants to be.
Yeah.
Wants to be, for better or worse, a Souls-like game, which is pretty much what it looks like it is. Whereas this is like, yeah, I want to be Ghost of Tsushima, The Witcher, Final Fantasy 15.
Yeah, I really... And, you know, my hope is that this game is actually a couple of years away, because, honestly, the UI was indecipherable to me. And because after that prologue bit, they fast-forward you. They wouldn't let us play what comes after the prologue. And I did ask, I was like, can you put me on the path of a mission so at least I can see something? And they said they'd done that. They said to follow this man, and he went into a village and didn't do anything from that point onwards. So I was just like, that's where
I might have been take this man.
Well, that's where I found the that's where I found the bounty board that told me to go and find the goose. So I went and found the goose. But my hope is that in a game that is promising like this ultimate freedom and kind of do you want to be the thief or do you want to be the doctor or do you want to be the bodyguard? My hope is that there's actually enough options that it's very easy to think that, like, the swords, you know, the traveling swordsman could be very, very in depth. Because, like, the combat system was pretty good. Like, certainly not as slick as Black Myth, but it was good for what it needed to be.
Yeah.
But is it good to be a doctor? Is learning the, you know, if I'm putting all of my skills into the doctor?
I mean,
yeah, honourably, yes, and very much needed.
Yeah.
But I don't know, is that going to be fun for the game? Am I going to be able to build someone that is actually a doctor? Or is it going to be, I've got to build a swordsman?
A doctor swordsman.
But they've got a bit of doctor skills on the side.
Doctor swordsman. We'll see you now. So.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds bonkers. I'm going to see more of it, frankly, because I don't know what the hell's going on there.
There's a GIF in the previews up on the site if you want to read whatever. But one of the GIFs is just someone like basically using, I guess, like a Tai Chi style move to grab a bear out of midair and swing it over their shoulder. So it's wild, if nothing else.
It's interesting. I'll give it that. I hope this podcast has been interesting. Sorry if the audio quality is not up to standard, but you know, we're crowd around a little table in Al's hotel room recording this on a on something.
You sure should have put that disclaimer in at the start.
You all worked it out by now. Back to normal service next week, though. Probably with more nonsense. Probably more Gamescom games that we haven't been able to fit in here.
Well, we've still got another 2-3 days of Gamescom to go.
And also, probably, will we have played Starfield by now? I don't know. Who knows?
I mean, Armor Core will be out, and I'm into playing that. Oh,
well, there we go. Big Max. Matt's going to have a very fun week alone in his room. This has been lovely. Should we go get some food?
Let's go get some food.
Hungry boys. Okay. Goodbye.
Bye. Bye.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.